You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Thursday. That's right, Thursday already, July 19th, 2018. Thursday already. Man, this week's going fast. Thanks for joining me this morning for an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines today. I've got a number of issues I want to discuss. Of course, today is day number 546. I've been mistaken once in a while on that date or in the number of days that Donald Trump's been president. Let me just re-clarify, of course, using my dates calculator, days between dates calculator, it's 546. And of course, since May 17th of 2017, the date of the special counsel, day number 429. So he's been under fire officially, for the major part of his presidency. But now we're looking at, of course, a larger picture. Look, I'm going to get into something here. Dan Bongino mentioned this yesterday. I've been seeing this on my Twitter feed. I've been seeing this. I've been getting emails about this, and I'm as angry as Dan Bongino is about this, because even some of the conservative, so-called self-proclaimed conservatives are very mistaken on this. When Donald Trump was speaking in at a press conference, and this is during his overseas trip, he mentioned, where is the DNC server? And of course, that prompted, and just to take you back, I don't want to duplicate what Dan Bongino has said, for example, but just so people understand, at the epicenter of everything that we're seeing today, with the Mueller special counsel or independent counsel investigation, the accusations of Russian hacking and all of this, at the epicenter of this, are the DNC servers. Which is why, by the way, we asked Jack Berkman on our flagship show last week. We will, and extend an invitation to Matt Couch. By the way, if you know Matt, if you're listening to this broadcast, the Doug Hagman Radio Show, I would love to have Matt Couch on the flagship show. I know he's done a lot of investigative work. Just let me clarify something here going off to the side for a second. The reason we had Berkman on is because he was the one that gave the press conference. All right? Newsmaker giving a press conference. I understand the role of Matt Couch in this. I understand the role of Frank Whelan in this. I get that. I totally understand it. And I was hoping that Berkman would expand upon the facts of the case. Well, that wasn't the case at all. So if you're listening to this broadcast and you know Matt Couch, just send him an email or tap him on the shoulder or whatever and say, look, we'd like to have you come on the flagship show. That's not, I mean, I'm not asking you to do our producer's work for us, but they're for him. But it's just the most expedient way, because we've got to talk about this, because at the epicenter of the of what we're seeing today are the DNC servers. And that's where the Seth Rich homicide comes into play. That's where the hacking versus the leaks come in. That's where all of this really, that's the genesis of this. But the reason I bring this up, and I'm seeing this in real time myself, and it's aggravating me, especially as an investigator. Look, the FBI never had physical possession of the DNC server or servers, plural. Never, not once. And as Bongino said in his program, and I got a lot of respect for the guy. He's a Secret Service, former Secret Service agent, good author, good talk show host. I got a lot of respect for the guy. But here's the thing, and he's right. The narrative that's going on, or the excuse that, well, you know, because of technology today, the FBI really did not need physical possession of the server. CrowdStrike, for example, working on behalf of DNC. CrowdStrike actually provided images, basically the forensic picture of the server Therefore, the physical possession of the server was not necessary. What a load of baloney that is, all right? Stop it. If you are a conservative out there and you're talking like that, well, you know, forensics the way it, or the technology the way it is, you really don't actually need physical possession of the server. Wrong. No, you do. You do not rely on a third party. That's not how investigations are done. And most assuredly, that's not how investigations of this caliber are done. You take the server and have it forensically analyzed in-house with the FBI, their technology people, not some third party. End of story. So, and one more time. So whoever is saying it is not necessary or was not necessary to surrender the actual equipment, the physical equipment, you are wrong. Period. And by the way, Donald Trump is right. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at a page. When I typed in to the search engine Google, which is always interesting to see the results from Google, which I don't use, by the way, as my primary search engine. Use anything else but Google. When I typed in Donald Trump plus DNC servers, I received, wow, top stories. What Mueller knows about the DNC hack and Trump doesn't. Okay, that's pretty presumptuous. That's by Politico. Donald Trump's missing server comments get all of the details wrong. PolitiFact. No, that to me, in my professional opinion, is a lie. 8 suspect claims from the Trump-Putin news conference. Well, okay, that's something different. Trump's missing server comments get all of the details wrong. This by PolitiFact. Trump's missing DNC server is neither missing nor a server. This from the Daily Beast. What are these people? Do you know anything about investigations? Motherboard.vice.com. Trump's stupid. Where is the DNC server conspiracy theory? Oh, here we go again with conspiracy theories now. Fact check by NBC News. They're the arbiter, of course, of truth, I'm sure. The beacon of truth. Fact check. Trump promoted conspiracy theories. Here's the truth. Axios.com. What's wrong with these people? Why Trump's where's the server is the wrong question about, and that's truncated. Gizmodo.com. Trump is still rambling about a dumb theory that the DNC is hiding, and then again, the truncated. I'm not going to get into all of this garbage, but I'm going to tell you right now, as an investigator, I've worked alongside of the FBI, and my wife, she says, why do you have to just say that all so much? Well, because people are tuning into this program. They don't know who I am. I could be some idiot in my mom's basement with a microphone. Of course, that might be a little bit troublesome, given the fact that, God rest her soul, my mom's not with us anymore, but... I have worked cases alongside of the FBI and the Department of Justice in my capacity as a consultant, as an operational asset, an informational asset. So I feel the need to differentiate myself from just some writer at some whatever website who does not understand the process of the investigation. When you were talking about the biggest, the largest, the most significant criminal, actually terror-related investigation in the country next to 9/11. I mean, when you're talking this caliber of investigation, Comey relied upon an image provided or images, in other words, forensic details provided by CrowdStrike instead of demanding possession and examination of the actual servers. That's what happened. And to those on the right and on the left, there's Comey, there's your hero. And all of these other headlines, what a bunch of bunk. That is that this is one of the most insulting aspects. And people are buying this. People on the right are buying this explanation. How crazy is this? You do not, I mean, I've seen lesser crimes that have resulted in the subpoenaing or the getting a search warrant, even from a cooperative or supposedly cooperative witness / victim. And look, we don't care what you want. We don't. Well, hey, thanks for the images, the forensic images. Thanks very much. But we're going to do this on our own. That's usually how the FBI acts and reacts and handles cases. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for your help. Oh, by the way, we're taking all of this. Sorry for any, well, not sorry for any inconvenience. Deal with it. What a bunch of crap this Comey is saying and has been saying. And all of these websites are perpetuating. And the lame stream mocking bird media are attempting to convince the public. And what's worse are people on our side, people on the right, the conservatives, self-proclaimed conservatives, are perpetuating this myth that, well, that's okay. That's okay. No worries. No worries at all. We got this. The images will do fine. CrowdStrike, no problem. This week I talked about the incestuous relationship between CrowdStrike and who owns CrowdStrike and others. So it stinks to high heaven right from the beginning. I don't know how anyone could be satisfied with this. You know what? I wasn't going to go into this. But I am going to go into this now because I'm pretty hacked off about this. All right. CrowdStrike, the DNC hack. Because this is at the epicenter of this garbage narrative that Donald Trump him or his people around him somehow rigged the 2016 election. And, of course, the DNC servers hacked the DNC servers, or Russia hacked the DNC servers, okay? Look, the DNC and the mainstream, well, the lamestream media, they are absolutely consumed with Donald Trump and his claims of a couple of days ago. They're consumed. They're saying he's a liar. And that's offensive to me. And when you look at the narrative, what we're living today, as I mentioned, Justin Caruso from the Daily Caller wrote about this last year. And it's, so this is no new news, but let's remind ourselves of what's going on. You had this narrative, which is focused around two hacks, and I use hacks in air quotes here, of a DNC server that led to the release of, number one, embarrassing emails during the DNC during their convention, and then the hack of John Podesta's email, which led to several embarrassing moments for the Clinton campaign later in 2016, sometime in October, thereabouts. And both have been attributed to the Russians, both of these hacks. And they're hacks, and they're attributed to the Russians. We're CrowdStrike, and we said so, although the FBI, no, we're not going to turn over the servers to you. And Comey says, well, you know, it's as good as having the servers, this technological forensic footprint. No, it's not. No, it is not. And especially with a story this big. All right. Let's just a few things that you need to know, if for nothing else, just some of the higher points. The only who is behind it? Who said the Russians hacked the DNC servers? There's one firm, CrowdStrike. Period. CrowdStrike is the only source of the, it's not the FBI. Well, the FBI via proxy, I suppose. If you rely upon evidence that is not quite evidence. You know, when I say I want a document, for example, If I want to sign corporate documents, I want the documents, and I'll sign the original documents. I don't want a copy of the documents. I want the documents. So it's same case here, same line of thinking here. You don't want a copy. You don't want images. You want the actual equipment. It's funny when you look at this, because it was April of 2016, 2 months before the June report that alleged this Russian conspiracy. Okay, when Barack Hussein Obama appointed a guy by the name of Stephen Chbosinski, Chbosinski, Stephen Chbosinski, the general counsel and chief risk officer for CrowdStrike. Obama appointed Stephen Chbosinski of CrowdStrike to the Commission on Enhancing National Cybersecurity. Okay, all right. Now, the co-founder of CrowdStrike, George Kurtz, said at the time, "Yeah, we wish Steve and the rest of the commissioners every success in this important effort. Their dedicated and thoughtful leadership on the issues holds great potential for promoting innovation and benefits of technology while lowering the very security risks we are facing today." Interesting foresight, no? So Obama appoints a CrowdStrike officer to an administrative post, 2 months before all of this happened. Coincidence? Maybe. And of course, as I mentioned, the FBI never looked at the DNC servers, and it matters. Does it matter? Yes, it matters. Only CrowdStrike did. Even to this day. The only claim coming about Russian hackers is, of course, from CrowdStrike. Now, and they began monitoring the DNC system when? May 5, 2016. Hack in June. Interesting. The DNC also reportedly paid CrowdStrike $168,000. You know, I've got a camera security system at my home. Anyone steps foot on the property, I know about. It's recorded. It's kept both on-site and off-site. If there is an incident, I'm just saying if there is an incident. I've got a security company who works for me. And the reason I'm saying this again, it's not about me, but I'm just trying to give you personalized examples so you can relate. Maybe you can relate. Certainly, it helps me relate. I work with a security company, obviously, because I've had many, 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 many credible threats on my life. I've had FBI agents at my door, sitting at my dining room table, telling me, "Hey, watch out for this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. Oh, by the way, we caught somebody in this airport intending to come to see you, come to your city." On and on and on and on. Okay, so credible reports. And that's because we talk. The reason, of course, is I'm not very popular, especially among the Islamic jihadists. That includes Sheikh Jalani, Barak Ali Jalani, by the way, of the Muslims of the Americas, or the Jamaat al-Fukra crowd, who I've got a fatwa against me, is posted on the internet and is documented by Dr. Paul L. Williams. But that aside, I've got both a local and a security company that takes care of me, local security company. I've got a hard drive, of course, on premise, but also as a backup, the activity is kept off-site as well. So if something happens, let's say a horrific motor vehicle accident happens in my front yard. I don't know. Just as an example, or some murder happens in my front yard. Do you think for 1 second that the police would say, "Hey, Doug, you know, when you have a chance, can you take a thumb drive and just copy the security footage from your security system and drop by the office. We're looking at the Somerset. No. No. Do you think for 1 minute the security company I deal with would contact the police and say, hey, I looked at it, and you know what? Yeah, there was a homicide, and I'll give you the general, you know, general description. No, that wouldn't fly either. As a matter of fact, I've got a contract that specifies what happens or what needs to happen in the event of some action. I don't want to spend too much time on this or drive this point home. The point is this. The investigating officers will take the physical evidence for court, period. Now, would that inconvenience me by not having this hard drive? Yes, but the fact of the matter is the security company would provide me with another hard drive. Plus, they already are monitoring. So, I mean, there would be no interruption in service is what I'm trying to say. So I don't want to hear, well, this was an election cycle, and it was really important because they were using the servers. No, you're talking about one of the biggest crimes in American history, and you've got Comey lying to the American public, in my view. You've got every progressive leftist lying about this very issue. That's at the epicenter of everything. So the FBI never looked at the DNC servers. The DNC hired CrowdStrike May 5th, 2016. This, according to the Daily Mail. You can look it up if you want. DNC reportedly paid CrowdStrike $168,000 for their services. By the way, May 5th, 2016, bang, June, hack. Comey contradicted the DNC story on FBI asking to see the server. Should tell you this as well. The DNC claimed that the reason the FBI never examined their hack server was simple. The FBI never requested to do so. Okay, wait a minute. No, that's not true. DNC Deputy Communications Director Eric Walker told BuzzFeed News in an email, the DNC had several meetings with representatives of FBI's cyber division and its Washington field office, the Department of Justice's National Security Division, and the U.S. Attorney's offices, and it responded to a variety of requests for cooperation. But the FBI never requested access to the DNC computer servers. Never requested access. However, and this is important, this claim was contradicted by Comey, who was at that time the FBI director, who sat right in the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing in January, that there were multiple requests at different levels to look at the DNC servers. So, but he never got them. What is wrong with this guy? Oh, instead he said, Comey said, a highly respected private company got access to the servers. And he was referring to CrowdStrike. Now, there were senior FBI officials involved in this, and there was an interview in Wired.com. The FBI repeatedly stressed to DNC officials the necessity of obtaining direct access to the servers and data. Everyone else but Comey, of course. Only to be rebuffed until well after the initial compromise had been mitigated. This left the FBI no choice but to rely upon a third party for this information, that being CrowdStrike. Get it together, folks. But as I mentioned earlier this week, in one of my programs earlier this week, CrowdStrike co-founder, the co-founder and the chief technical officer of CrowdStrike, who is it? Dmitry Alperovich. He is a non-resident senior fellow on where? The Atlantic Council. I said this, I think it was yesterday. The Atlantic Council, very hawkish on Russia, previously publishing reports about topics like how the West can get tougher on Russia and how to fight back against Russian political warfare and how to respond to Russia's anti-Western aggression. I mean, you see where this is going, right? Other articles, Atlantic Council, from Russia with hate, the Kremlin's support for violent extremism in Central Europe. Okay. By the way, the Atlantic Council is funded in part by NATO, which further, the only reason NATO exists, of course, is because of the old Soviet Union, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization fighting against the threat of the old Soviet Union. Oh, and speaking of funding, the Atlantic Council is funded by the Open Society Initiative for Europe. Where have I heard that before? That's, of course, the program of leftist billionaire George Soros. It's part of their George Soros' Open Society Foundation. The Atlantic Council is also funded by the Viktor Pinchuk Foundation. Where have we heard that name before? Viktor Pinchuk. Pinchuk is a Ukrainian billionaire who reportedly gave $25 million. Guess to who? Oh, come on. You can do it. That's right. The Clinton Foundation. And he was invited to Clinton's home for a dinner back in 2012 when she was Secretary of State. Despite denials. Oh, no. He was never on her schedule during her time as Secretary. Oh, yeah? and CrowdStrike, by the way, just tossing this information out for your edification. It's notable that CrowdStrike received $100 million in investments led by Google Capital back in 2015, which is owned by Alphabet, which is Eric Schmidt, Alphabet's chairman, who supported Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. But more than just supporting Clinton, leaked emails from WikiLeaks in November 2016 showed that in 2014, Schmidt wanted an active role in Hillary Clinton's campaign. Nothing to see here, folks. Just move right along. According to the Wall Street Journal, Eric Schmidt sent a Clinton campaign official a lengthy memo with advice on running the campaign. He told campaign officials he was ready to fund, advise, recruit talent, and wants to be head outside advisor, top outside advisor. This is a 2014 email from Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta to Robbie Mook. Politico reported back in, this would be November 2016, that Schmidt, Eric Schmidt, again, Google, Alphabet, Schmidt, okay, that Schmidt served in a personal capacity as an advisor to the Clinton operation. How would you like that? How would you like to own a business or whatever and have the head of Google, Alphabet, you know, Eric Schmidt, the guy behind pretty much everything internet-wise, say, yeah, let me help you. You think that might not make a difference? Well, apparently in this case it did not, but you get the idea. And Schmidt, by the way, also funded a startup called The Groundwork. And I'm not going to get too far into the weeds here, but The Groundwork, this based on Democratic campaign operatives, is part of efforts by Schmidt to ensure that Clinton has the engineering talent needed to win the election. Well, mission not accomplished there, Mr. Schmidt. With all of your billions of dollars and whatever, God had different plans for this nation. But the whole crux of this conversation, why I spent the first half of this show, this episode today, talking about the DNC servers, is because people are not getting this correctly. There are people out there, even on our side, who are not, and I'm sorry, you are absolutely 100% wrong. Incorrect. Period. So that's that. Now, there is one other aspect of the current environment, because, look, I see the entirety, the population of the United States, with precious few people like listeners to this show, in my view, listeners to the Hagmann Report. Look, there are people being absolutely gamed by the propaganda media. I can't remember what Stephen Mencken called it yesterday, but the mockingbird media, the should-be-mocked media, but nonetheless, there is something else. The Strzok hearings brought out something else of great importance, and that is this. Remember when Representative Louis Gohmert was questioning Strzok? Remember he said something. He said that a foreign entity could have been, was most likely been, was secretly receiving Hillary Clinton emails while she was Secretary of State, many, including many that contained classified information, and that the FBI ignored this information during its so-called investigation by Batman, Peter Strzok. Remember when Louis Gohmert said that? What was he? Well, I'm sorry. Did I miss something on the cable news networks? Hey, Rachel Maddow. Hey, Chris Matthews. Hey, Brian Stelter. Did you miss that exchange with Louis Gohmert? Where it was verified at one point during Strzok's congressional testimony last week by Representative Louis Gohmert, who said that Clinton's emails had been surreptitiously forwarded to a foreign entity, and the FBI investigators who were allegedly conducting a thorough, unbiased professional probe into Clinton's mishandling of classified materials, what did they do? They ignored that. Let me quote exactly, if you don't mind, because, frankly, I like it to be accurate. Louis Gohmert, here is right from the transcript, C-SPAN transcripts here. Transcripts of the C-SPAN exchange. Louis Gohmert. And I quote, "You said earlier in this hearing, you were concerned about a hostile foreign power affecting the election. Do you recall the former Intelligence Community Inspector General, Chuck McCullough, having an investigation into an anomaly found on Hillary Clinton's emails?" That's the question. And then he goes on. "Let me refresh your memory. The Intelligence Committee Inspector General, Chuck McCullough, sent his investigator, Frank Rucker, along with an IGIC attorney, Janet McMillan, to brief you and Dean Chappelle and two other FBI personnel, who I won't name at this time, about an anomaly they had found on Hillary Clinton's emails that were going to this private unauthorized server that you were supposed to be investigating." Strzok: "Well, I remember meeting Mr. Rucker on either one or two occasions. I don't recall the specific content or discussions." Gohmert: "Mr. Rucker reported to those, Mr. Rucker reported to those of you, the four of you there, in the presence of the ICIG attorney, that they had found this anomaly on Hillary Clinton's emails going through their private server. And when they had done the forensic analysis, they found that her emails, every single one except four, that's over 30,000, were going to an address that was not on the distribution list. It was a compartmentalized bit of information that was sending it to an unauthorized source. Do you recall that?" Strzok: "Sir, I don't." Gohmert: "Well, he went on to explain it. And you didn't say anything. You thanked him. You shook his hand. The problem is it was going to an unauthorized source that was a foreign entity unrelated to Russia. And from what you've said here, you did nothing more than nod and shake the man's hand when you didn't seem to be all that concerned about our national integrity of our election when it was involving Hillary Clinton. So the forensic examination was done by the ICIG, and they can document that, but you were given that information and you did nothing with it. Think about that for a second. What we have here is the lead, if not one of the lead, if not the lead investigators in the Clinton email case, apparently learned that a foreign entity was getting all of the Clinton emails, including many that contained classified information, and did nothing from investors.com. There's an article about this. Again, this is related. This is at the epicenter of what we're seeing today. According to IBD, investigators.com, in fact, between the initial and final drafts of former FBI Director James Comey's statement, the wording changed from "it was reasonably likely that hostile actors gained access to her emails" to "just possible." So they downplayed this. They did. Not only did they know about it, but they changed the wording of the final drafts of the reports from, yeah, you know what, it was reasonably likely that hostile actors got access to Clinton's emails, to saying, yeah, it was just, it's possible. In his comments on the earlier draft, Strzok said that, look, we've got no evidence classified information was ever shared with an unauthorized party. But if what Louis Gohmert is saying is true, and he repeatedly claims to have the evidence, the disinterest shown by the FBI at this revelation is beyond anything comprehensible. The entire purpose of the investigation was to determine whether Clinton had broken the law by being grossly negligent in her handling of classified information. All of her emails ending up in the hands of a foreign entity would, by any honest estimation, constitute gross negligence, if not something worse. Because remember, Hillary Clinton never once used a government email address for government work. She used a private server, compromising the safety, the security, the integrity of our nation. And she is still walking around, not being held to account. And I want to know how in the world you people who are so behind Mueller, so behind Sessions at this point even, how can you explain this? This is why I like to go to the facts. I don't want to hear any speculation about 3D chess and all this crap. It is what it is. You got Strzok saying, well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I was told I didn't do anything about it. I don't know. Representative Louis Gohmert saying, I've got the evidence. And yawns by the cable news outlets. Yet accusations against Donald Trump of Russian collusion, whatever that is. And let's not forget the Russian, of course, at the epicenter of this, the Russian hacking, what I just, the first half of the program talking about, the numbskulls out there just not getting the fact that, no, you need the devices. I think Dan Bongino did reference it as the best practice. Of course, it's the best practice. You take the devices, you do a forensic analysis. You don't rely upon a third-party information of images. It can be manipulated. It can't really be authenticated. It's basically akin to hearsay. In my view, hearsay evidence. You want the original, not a copy. And then you've got this. Strzok. Well, look, if the FBI, in fact, ignored this, it adds further weight that the Clinton email investigation and obviously the Trump/Russia investigation is filled and compromised with political bias. My goodness, yes, it is. So, struck was the agent, of course, who, when his girlfriend Lisa Page asked if Trump would become president, Strzok responded, "No, no, we won't. We'll stop it." You know the story. I don't have to go through all of this again. He's one of five, by the way. He's one of five officials involved in the Clinton email case that the Justice Department Inspector General specifically singled out for their actions during the investigation that brought discredit to themselves, sowed doubt about the FBI's handling of the Clinton investigation, and impacted adversely, I might add, the reputation of the FBI. I'm just curious. Let me ask, toss out a question. Who, may I ask, is this foreign entity? Is anyone asking that question? Why was this dismissed out of hand? And by the way, cable news outlets, are you going to show any interest in this? Hey, where's the next so-called Woodward and Bernstein in the Mockingbird print compromised media? There are no more. They're bought and paid for by the non-existent, discredited, debunked deep state. And that laughed. I want to say this because I know there are people who listen to this show and transcribe this show. I live in many people's heads rent-free. I love it. I absolutely love it. So I'm talking to you out there in this case. You supporters of people like Comey, or you supporters of people like Mueller and his ilk. Explain this. Go ahead. Good. I'm waiting. Explain this. Oh, moving to a different topic here. I want to tell you what else is getting my goat here, really, really in a big way. Watch the DNC. I would ask the listeners of this program, keep your eyes on the Democratic National Committee. Tom Perez, a communist is communist, believe me. Throw in the Che Guevara or the Castro costume outfit, uniform, he'd fit right in. Who's the co-chair? Keith Ellison. Remember, there was a fight. It's not a fight, but it was either going to be Ellison or Perez that was going to head the DNC. Had happened to be Perez with Obama's backing, of course. All right. Now, Perez is the chair of the DNC. And, of course, that's where we get Ocasio-Cortez or whatever her name is being the darling, the socialist-slash-communist darling of the Democratic Party, but I digress, of the Communist Party. But I saw Maria Canis, Prepare for Persecution author, sent me this notice, and I tracked it down, and, yeah, it's 100%, and I was, in fact, it's published at WorldNet Daily, but the vice chairman of the DNC is asking Jeff Bezos, who is the Amazon CEO, to stop the sale of books, of literature, of music published by entities, groups that have been labeled as hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. All right? You heard me right. The vice chairman of the DNC is asking Amazon to basically ban books, ban literature, ban music, ban anything sold. Asking Amazon to stop selling anything that the Southern Poverty by anyone that the Southern Poverty Law Center identified as a hate group or individual associated with a hate group. And this letter to Amazon, to Jeff Bezos, was written by Keith Ellison, the Muslim congressman from Minnesota. who in this letter specifies concern about neo-Nazis and white nationalist authors. The letter itself contains a pretty sweeping statement about the Southern Poverty Law Center designated hate group groups. And Robert Spencer had said, well, that alone should be cause for alarm. Now, I like Robert Spencer, and in fact, I had him on the program, and he's right. Wait a second. You've got the Southern Poverty Law Center, who has, through various other means, has identified our show as a hate, part of a hate, neo-Nazi white supremacist group, and others who I know I'm friends with. Part of this toxic mix of hate, and because of that, no, we should be just totally removed from Amazon. Clearly, in this WND article, clearly, Ellison wants Amazon, which has, along with Barnes & Noble, it's a virtual, they've got a virtual monopoly on book sales in the U.S. You've got Amazon, you've got Barnes & Noble. This is why, as an aside, I love the local bookstores. I will drive 90 miles to go to a bookstore and spend hours in a bookstore that's locally owned, secondhand books and first editions, and I just love that. But see, the generations of today, of course, what do they want? They want it on their devices and stuff. But I love the feel and the holding of the book and the smell of the book. And I've got a library of both in my office and as well as in my home. But because pretty soon, I just have this feeling that books are going to be a thing of the past. It's not going to be this generation. But to do this, think about the audacity by Keith Ellison, the Muslim Marxist in Congress, asking Bezos, asking Amazon to ban the sale of books. In fact, I've got one book that they want banned from an author they want banned. The Religious Freedom Coalition. And of course, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Just like the establishment media, Ellison assumes the Southern Poverty Law Center is some sort of reliable, unbiased arbiter of what is and isn't a hate group. Oh my goodness, I'm so thankful that they're there to tell me, because I certainly, as an adult, you know, there's no way I could possibly identify that myself. So, I'm so thankful that the Southern Poverty Law Center is saving me from myself. About as thankful as I am that that Right Wing Watch and the morons, in my view, there at Right Wing Watch, they're saving me from myself. My goodness. But this move, think about the audacity of this move by Keith Ellison. Let that sink in for a second. Ellison's saying, hey, Bezos, anybody on that list, SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center list, identified as a hate group based on their criteria, we want you not to sell their products via Amazon. I don't care if it's a necklace or a book or a worship DVD, CD, whatever. We don't want you to sell it, especially books. Especially if there's anything that can be of useful, provide useful information about the threats we face. No, we don't want you to. We don't want you to sell it. Remember me speaking about Ellison, the Marxist Muslim, but he's also part of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is the communist faction of our Congress. In addition to the Muslim faction. Oh, and about Ellison. Ellison and the Muslim Brotherhood. This, according to Robert Spencer, this has been, this is undeniable, all right? Keith Ellison, as a U.S. congressman, Ellison's association with groups tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, they're there. The congressman Congressman Keith Ellison, the Muslim Marxist congressman from Minnesota, has spoken at a convention of the Islamic Society of North America, which has admitted ties to Hamas, the Palestinian arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. Back in 2008, Ellison accepted $13,350 from another Muslim Brotherhood organization, the Muslim American Society, to go on a pilgrimage to Mecca. Huh. Isn't that special? Also, the Hamas-linked Council on American Islamic Relations, you know, CARE, they raised money for Ellison's first congressional campaign. And to pay back, Ellison has spoken at numerous CARE events. And let us not forget, every chance I have, I like to remind people that the Council on American Islamic Relations is the unindicted co-conspirator, as designated by the Department of Justice, in a Hamas terror funding case known as the Holy Land Foundation trial. Let me repeat that for effect. CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is the unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation, the Hamas terror funding case. And of course, Ellison says in his letter to Bezos that since the election of President Donald J. Trump, hate groups and us deplorables, but specifically hate groups, have been on the rise, and racist violence has swelled in this country. Huh. I wonder who's behind that. Well, if you look at the Southern Poverty Law Center, it's you and me. Oh, my goodness. Look, this is a big deal. This is not, you know, your Uncle Jed writing a letter to Jeff Bezos saying, you know what, I really wish you'd pull the books down. No, you've got this Keith Ellison, this Muslim Marxist, inside our Congress petitioning Amazon, one of the biggest monopolies, Leviathans on the planet, to not sell anything, any books especially, that have been by publishers, people, individuals, organizations, entities that have been designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group or a white nationalist or whatever you want to call them. Anything that they object to. You talk about the thought police. There we are. Leave it up to the Southern Poverty Law Center, actually, to tell you what you can and cannot read. Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, they've ended up on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list because of their advocacy for, guess what, traditional marriage, opposition to abortion. Conservatism is under attack in this country in many ways. This is what I've been saying this over and over again. You've got this multifaceted war. You've got lies. You've got lies being perpetuated by this propaganda media about the server. You've got people lying, in my view, under oath in Congress, and not under oath. You've got a Justice Department where there is no justice, a country where there's multi-tiered justice. If it's you and I, we're in jail. If it's Hillary Clinton, in my view, or someone else, they're not in jail. They walk free. Then you've got these Marxist Muslims who have insinuated themselves into the ranks of Congress, telling you what you can and can't read, what Amazon should or should not be selling, relying on groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's where we're at today. That's why I have said consistently this week, look, we are in a civil war right now. There could be no denying it. And those people on Twitter, you know, the crazy eyes people I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about. This the inside joke, but you know, crazy eyes. Or the silhouettes. I like those too. Wanting to ban InfoWars. Wanting to shut down InfoWars. Congress wanting to shut down members. I shouldn't say Congress. Members of Congress saying, we need to ban InfoWars. It's not about InfoWars. It's not about the Religious Freedom Coalition. It's not about the Family Research Council or the Alliance Defending Freedom. It's about us, you and me, because we are there. If we're not there already, we're next. It's not about any one of us. It's about all of us. And we are in the fight. That's why I felt it so important to rectify, as Dan Bongino did, I think it was yesterday, rectifying the issue about the server. We're being lied to. We're being gamed. Let's look at this for once what it is. Because there is something in the course of investigations. Any investigator will tell you this. There's this paralysis of analysis. It happens. Just much like tunnel vision. Paralysis of analysis. You get so busy analyzing things that you don't do anything else but analyze, and you're paralyzed by the analysis that you're doing, paralysis by analysis, and you end up doing nothing. We need to act. Look, Oath Keeper, Stuart Rhodes, speaking with him, talking with him. Stuart saying, we're really close. We really need to get our act together. We, meaning the conservatives, the Christian conservatives. Join. I don't get paid for saying this. This is just some friendly advice. Join Oath Keepers if you haven't done so already. Join Gun Owners of America or the NRA or both if you haven't done so already. I know it's money's tight. I get that. But we need to support, because we need these groups when called upon. We need to respond. By the way, we don't react. We respond. Reaction denotes this knee-jerk, off-the-cuff, unplanned series of events. What is coming, we will need to respond to. I know that's not proper English. But it's coming. It's here. The environment, the infrastructure is already built. And none of us will be spectators in any of this. Please understand that. To the extent, shall I say this, you're either going to be complicit or you're going to be against this takedown of our representative republic. Complicit with, maybe via your silence, or maybe, well, you know what, I'll order from Amazon. It's convenient. It's okay. When the bookstore right down the road that's mom and pop owned, you can go there. Okay, we need to support our own. We need to get involved. Look, I don't have all the answers. I don't know specifically what we must do, but I do know this. We're running out of time. And I know that's been a rather consistent, frequent theme of this show. But if it was true a month ago, it's even truer today. Am I right? Of course I am. We need to get together, stick together, and uplift one another. Have each other's back. Identify, know who our friends are. Make sure we have the right people in our lives and the wrong people out of our lives. Just as important. Gather, be prepared, and by all means, pray. The old saying, there are no atheists in foxholes. Okay, I don't know if that's even a correct statement. But it applies here. We need to embrace prayer. Pray like never before. Pray for our president. Pray for our country. Pray for freedom. Pray against the wiles of the devil. Folks, have a great Thursday as you make your way through the day. Give your spouse just a kiss and a hug, and tell them how much you love them, as well as your children and your dog. God bless. Until later.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.